Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW and Sitcom, where it's 27 degrees in sunshine. Today's Wednesday, February 29th, 2012. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. The 37-year-old new CEO of the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium has pleaded no contest to a disorderly conduct charge. Charles Clement originally faced charges of domestic violence, assault, and operating under the influence. Clement was given a one-year suspended sentence Monday in Anchorage court. Anchorage Municipal Prosecutor Cynthia Franklin says the original charges stemmed from a January 4th incident in which Anchorage police found Clement operating a vehicle with a family member with him. Court documents show that person told police she had head injuries from a scuffle with Clement. However, during a second interview, the person gave a scattered account of how she was injured. The domestic violence charge was subsequently dropped. Court records show Clement's blood alcohol level was at 0.178%. Alaska's legal intoxication threshold is 0.08%. In a statement, SEARCH Chair Jolene Edenshaw says the healthcare provider's leadership supports Clement. Consortium officials say he did not begin CEO duties until February 6th. The Sitka Assembly advanced changes to the senior citizen sales tax exemption at its regular meeting last night. The proposal would limit the exemption to seniors who pass a low-income means test. Another plan is on hold, the proposal to raise the sales tax cap from $1,000 to $1,500 has been delayed until April 10th. Assembly members voted to change the effective date to September 1st, but had questions about language in the ordinance that determines what can and cannot be grouped together to add up to the cap. Both of those measures are designed to bring more money into the city. Residents who testified said they were concerned that sales taxes are regressive and requiring more people to pay them during a bad economy would hurt both citizens and retailers. Eugene Solovyov suggested raising money by bringing more visitors to pay the tax, perhaps by building a deepwater dock near downtown. Tam Fondell said citizens want to see government make cuts before asking for money. A third tax plan to redistribute fish box tax money failed last night but did not die. Four votes are needed to kill an ordinance, and last night's vote against the measure was 2-3. The proposal would redistribute money from a $10 flat fee on fish boxes by taking some of it from Fish Enhancement and the General Fund and giving more to the city's Harbor Department. The tax is levied on charter operators who oppose the fee altogether. Also last night, the Assembly began a conversation about possible changes to the way Centennial Hall charges fees. Right now, community groups and nonprofit organizations can use most of the building for free. A plan to charge them to use the building didn't appear to gain much ground last night, as KCAW's Ed Ronco explains.
The proposal to charge everyone to use Sitka's Harrigan Centennial Hall brought testimony from a cross-section of the building's users: quilters, crafters, dancers, Historical Society board members, youth advocates, artists, and a few private citizens, all of whom lined up along the wall to take their turn at the microphone.
Sitka Summer Music Festival, it's extremely expensive to put this thing on. If you insist on raising the rates and making the other time other than when the concert's going on, we can't do it here probably. So you're going to kiss $90,000 goodbye.
I'm amazed that you are want to charge nonprofits. It seems anytime there's a financial issue, the city looks to nonprofits to fix it.
But we think the who should pay should be the general fund because of the wide benefit that the Centennial Hall provides to the community. I don't think there's a man, woman, or child in the city of Sitka that does not use this building one way or another.
And what I see and I'm concerned about is that this building loses its lifeblood.
I am here representing the Sitka Seafood Festival. We don't have a huge budget at this point. We don't have any paid staff members. But we have the potential to do something large, and the Centennial Building, a public option like this, allows us to start where we are and allows us to grow.
So we are the city, not just the Assembly, but everybody in this room is the city. By providing this building for ourselves to use, we also create advocates for this building, and we create advocates for this building when it comes time to do things like remodeling and increasing the size.
None of the organizations who testified were in favor of the changes, and most said they can't afford to pay for consistent use of the hall and would be forced to meet elsewhere. As it turned out, the assembly seemed to be humming the same tune.
I have a feeling that you were preaching to the choir.
Tor Christensen there, and before we go any further, let's tell you what this is all about. Right now, nonprofit groups can use most rooms in the city-owned convention center for free. Those range from the large exhibit room, which holds about 150 people, to the tiny little Davis room, which starts getting crowded at about 15 people. Still, the building is not entirely free to nonprofits. Everybody pays to use the huge auditorium, which can seat up to 500 people, or to use the commercial kitchen. And if a nonprofit group is having a fundraiser or an event where it charges admission, it pays then, too, no matter what room it's using. Centennial Hall costs nearly $500,000 to operate. The building made about $63,000 last year, with nearly half of its use falling into the free nonprofit category. So the idea behind the change in policy was to bring in some more money. Centennial Hall manager Don Kluding said if the building use stayed steady, the change in fees would bring in an additional $40,000. But Kluding did not appear too enthusiastic about the changes. When asked his opinion by Mayor Cheryl Westover, he gave a cautious recap of how the issue came up in the first place. Assemblymember Mike Reif asked Kluding what he thought might happen if the fees went into effect.
Use would substantially go down for sure. I mean, there's groups you heard this evening, groups like the Quilt Show, cannot afford it. They don't bring in any revenue. They don't have a revenue source. So I'm sure that groups like that would go down.
Assemblymember Tor Christensen agreed.
I think that if we do this, it will cost the city money. I think our net result will be a loss in funds. I can tell you that I'm involved with the Serums Symposium that Dave mentioned.
Serums is Southeast Regional EMS, which holds a conference in Sitka.
I will guarantee you, if Serums has to pay for the Centennial Building, it will never be in Sitka again.
Other assembly members chimed in to say they agreed that charging the nonprofit groups would scare off more business than it would scare up, and the idea appeared to die. Other parts of the policy change are still very much alive, though, including an evaluation of the building's hours of operation. The new policy calls for charging groups an hourly rate for events that take place outside normal business hours. Silent for most of the discussion was Assemblymember Pete Esquiro. Near the end of the assembly's deliberation, he pointed out that the building costs a lot of money to operate and said he hopes to hear more about that from the public when the issue comes up again.
Out of all the wonderful things that were said tonight, I didn't hear too many ideas for solutions. And I would challenge you to, when we bring this back again, that you come back perhaps with some suggested solutions to this dilemma, because it's not going to go away.
Assembly members are expected to discuss Centennial Hall at their next regular meeting on March 13th. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
Alaska's Board of Fisheries on Tuesday voted to close part of Sitka Sound to commercial herring harvest, but it wasn't as much as some wanted. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports from the board meeting in Ketchikan.
The board faced a number of proposals to lower catch levels, limit commercial fishing areas, or both. The Sitka Tribe of Alaska and some others wanted further protections for subsistence harvests of herring in their roe. The board voted down 8 of the 9 plans before it on Tuesday. The one that passed created subsistence-only zones by closing lucrative commercial harvest areas. Scott Kelly is Southeast Regional Supervisor for Fish and Game's Commercial Fisheries Division.
One of the board members submitted substitute regulatory language that provided for roughly half of the original areas, and that is what the board adopted.
The board unanimously voted down 3 proposals to change Sitka Sound's commercial herring fishery management plan. One would have revised the plan, another would have amended management, and a third would have repealed regulations establishing the guideline harvest level. Sitka Tribe of Alaska fisheries biologist Charles Russell says the state was too optimistic about the area's herring population.
SDA believes that if the population of Sitka Sound herring starts to drop off due to over-harvest or any natural factors, this proposal will slow the commercial harvest down, and 4 years better giving these fish a chance to rebound. It will benefit all user groups.
Proposals by the tribe and its members targeted protection of subsistence harvests, which they say have been dropping. But commercial groups said they were not catching enough fish to damage traditional use. Julianne Curry is executive director of the Petersburg Vessel Owners Association.
I guess the question I have to ask is really, what problem are we solving? They appear to be solving a problem that doesn't exist.
Fish and Game set this year's harvest higher than ever before. Commercial Fisheries Director Kelly says the department understands that isn't popular with all members of its policy-setting panel.
The board did have some concerns about the way we do stock assessment, and they suggested that we be a little more inclusive, and you know, we do hear what the board says and try and accommodate their wishes as best we can. But, I mean, in essence, our stock assessment, we will continue to use the age structured analysis model and continue to document the herring spawn deposition through our dive surveys as we have for many years.
Another plan before the board proposed keeping boats out of commercial fishing areas till they open. Another would have required permits for egg-on-branch harvests. This is Ed Schoenfeld reporting from the Board of Fisheries meeting in Ketchikan.
Basketball fans, sorry to see Sitka's four high school teams depart for the 3A tournament in Ketchikan this week, can still get their fix. Mount Edgecombe High School is hosting the region's 2A tournament at the same time. The tourney opens at 11:15 a.m. today when the top-ranked Yakutat boys take on number 8 Cake at the B.J. McGillis Gym on the Mount Edgecombe campus. Mount Edgecombe's athletic director, Andrew Frisky, says he won't be surprised if the top teams from this regional tournament go on next week to make their mark at the state level.
Last year, three of the four teams in the finals were all Southeast 2A schools. Skagway beat Yakutat in the championship for the girls, and Kalak boys lost to Point Hope boys. It just shows the quality of basketball for the 2As here. And I think it's going to be the same again this year with the girls' side. You know, the Kalak and Yakutat girls are just super tough, and the Yakutat boys this year undefeated as well.
The 2A tournament will be webcast. You can find the link on our website, kcaw.org, posted with the complete tournament schedule. Zone weather forecast today for Sitka and PA calls for partly sunny skies, patchy fog this morning, highs around 38 with light winds. This is KCAW in Sitka.